It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's good, San Diego? Welcome to the 3 o'clock hour. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, Matt Scraby. Got a daily gambit coming your way. But first, we must unpack the controversy over the weekend. And I just tell you, this is how far we've come. We are actually talking about a women's college hoop controversy. And it was controversy. There was a lot of people quite upset on X.
People are at each other's throats over this play.
100%.
Crazy. Would have thought it was the biggest thing in the history of college basketball, which is, as you said, Tony, fantastic. That's how many people watched this.
I actually had got into a good debate over the weekend with a friend of mine's about, well, let's get to this first, and then I'll get into that whole debate about women's sports and kind of some of the commentary from some of the veteran women players has kind of sparked some conversation. But we'll start with this play. UConn, Iowa, we're talking last 10 seconds of the game, maybe less than that, I think, actually. I can't remember the young ladies involved. Do we have their names close? Because
I know that Marshall was the Iowa player who had the audacity to run into the screen.
and by the way, she didn't try to run into it. She got crushed on a screen that they deemed, the officials deemed, was illegal.
Aaliyah Edwards is the one who was called for the foul.
She set the screen. I mean, it, to be fair, it was extremely close. At least in my eye. Some people felt like it wasn't. Some people felt like the game should not have been decided on an illegal screen call that was questionable. But nonetheless, that was UConn's last attempt at a tie ball game or winning it. The ball goes the other way. Iowa goes to the final. We know that they would end up losing that final to South Carolina yesterday. But there were some people furious. And I'm not going to lie. I didn't care one way or the other. I was happy that the discourse was happening about women's basketball.
Well, you know what I've said a thousand times.
We now go to our resident referee, Chris Ello.
That had to come in.
Of course, you're our resident referee.
If I've said it once, I've said it a thousand times. And if they don't call the foul.
That's right.
And the gal for UConn gets open because of an illegal screen. And she hits a three and they win the game. Then the officials, by not calling the foul, decided the game. What I've said so many times. If you swallow your whistle, you can decide the game. And for an example, do you remember the officials in the NFL swallowing their whistle a few years ago in the end of the Saints-Rams NFC Championship game and not calling pass interference?
Yes.
You can say, well, they shouldn't have called it because it was kind of close and it decided. No, they should have called it because it was close and it would have decided the game. So if you thought this was a foul, and I think most people felt it was a foul, then I don't think there's a really even much argument left as to whether or not it should have been called. It should have been called, and it was. So yeah. That was my take on it.
I agree. I think ultimately, in those situations, you got to be, you got to, when you set that screen, you got to make sure that you are completely set. And if it's simultaneous, that probably means you didn't get set on that screen, because that's what it looked like. It looked like as she start to set that screen, Marshall was already kind of seemed like kind of moving beyond it, and her left shoulder kind of etched out there just a hair, and that ended up costing UConn. And I thought. What's the point guard for UConn? I thought she said it.
Paige Beckers?
Beckers. I think she said it best. That game was not decided on that play alone. As she said, UConn didn't execute a few different times in that game, and all of that led to that loss that they had.
A lot of class from Beckers. A lot of class we saw yesterday from the winning team, South Carolina, and from the losing team, Iowa, and the star players. And the coach of South Carolina, Dawn Staley, gets a ton of credit because she gets it, Tony. She knows that the game is bigger even than her team winning a championship. And she knows that women's basketball has been the big winner in all of this.
Yeah. So. No, it has. And so I bring you to the next conversation that has kind of bubbled up over the weekend. They had a few WNBA stars that that basically were doing commentary on these games.
Right. It's like the Eli Manning cast on the Monday Night Football, but they do it for women's basketball.
The story I posted that started this debate, the video I posted was of Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi talking to Scottie Van Pelt. And Scottie Van Pelt asked a question. He said, basically, you know, when these young college hoopers get ready to go to the NBA, the NBA vets on the other side are telling them, hey, bring it. Come on in here. This isn't going to be no cakewalk. And he asked her, how is it interpreted on the women's side? And Diana Taurasi basically said the same thing. Listen, there's going to be the dose of reality is coming, is what she said. And that there's definitely a transition period for all women coming from college basketball to the WNBA. She said it like someone who was still in the league and still wants to be top of the mountain. And, you know, I think that offended some people as the pro. And I think the point she was making is there's levels to this. Just like in basketball, just like in baseball, you could be the most dominant player in college. When you get to the NBA, you may eventually be dominant, but it doesn't usually start out that way right away, and that seemed to perturb some folks.
Do you want to hear her actually saying it? Because I
yeah,
just pulled
go ahead.
It up.
You got it? Play it.
Right? When the college guys come out, they're waiting for them. I mean, Camilla's coming, Caitlin's coming, there's more than just that are coming. What will the league have in store for them when they get there?
Look, SVP, reality is coming.
Okay.
You know, there's levels to this thing, and that's just life. We all went through it.
Of course.
And you see it on the NBA side, and you're going to see it on this side, where, you know, you look superhuman playing against 18-year-olds, but you're going to come with some grown women that have been playing professional basketball for a long time. Not saying that it's not going to translate, because when you're great at what you do, you're just going to get better. But there is going to be a transition period where you're going to have to give yourself some grace as a rookie. And, you know, it might take a little bit longer for some people.
You know, she took a lot of heat for that, Tony, because people said Diana Taurasi was being a hater. They wanted Diana Taurasi to just say, oh, no, Caitlin Clark is fantastic, and she'll be great right away. Here's what they didn't say in any of those tweets that called Diana Taurasi a hater. They didn't say that she was answering that question. I never knew that she was asked that. I thought she just volunteered the information and said...
It's a massive problem with
that's a big difference.
Reporting these days.
If she just came on and said, hey, Caitlin Clark ain't all that. I mean, wait till she gets into the league. Then that's being a hater. But when you're being asked a question, is the WNBA going to have something for like they have in the NBA? She had every right to answer in the way she did. And this is fantastic.
Thank you.
It's fantastic because the league is that good, and people are going to be tuned in now to the WNBA that never tuned in before to see if Caitlin Clark can prove Diana Taurasi and others wrong.
Without a doubt, the argument that a friend of mine was making was that, you know, the WNBA and Diana Taurasi and company have never seen 14 million eyeballs on them and this, that, and the other. And that was the point being made. And I'm like, how is what she said hurting that? If anything, it's going to draw people in to want to watch those two get after it on the floor. Not a negative towards it.
When's Indiana play Phoenix, right? People are going to want to watch that game.
Exactly. And so, you know, I think we have kind of moved into this kind of, I don't want to say soft area, but you should want people tune in. When we originally started doing this sports thing and started putting it on TV, people wanted to see the best play against the best. Ultimately, that's still what it's about. And if Caitlin Clark is going to be one of the best, she's probably going to have to go through Diana Taurasi at some point, who is, by the way, was on a UConn team that didn't ever lose, if I'm not mistaken.
They won every game. She won
national championships. She's been an Olympian. She has the right to talk her stuff right here. And as you said, she was answering a question. I know everybody wants the kumbaya. You know, Caitlin Clark has just been great. But you know what? On the other side of it is something called a little bit of competitiveness. And I don't know that any athlete is just going to be like, yeah, you know, she's going to come in here and dominate us in this league.
We're not going to guard her. We're just going to let her, you know, fire away.
You can do both, right? You can embrace the young women that are coming in the league and also let them know that you're trying to kick their you-know-what in the process.
Yeah, it's going to be women's basketball. Just unbelievable. I'm so excited because, I mean, you guys know I've been in the game for a long time. Watching it, from Brittany Griner days, and you know, there's some superstars from even before that.
Lisa Leslie,
who never got the kind of attention and credit and eyeballs that these young ladies are bringing to the sport now. And if you watched that game yesterday, you saw what is really a fun sport to watch. These kids play the game right. Clark is a great passer. I know that you watch her for her logo shots, but she makes passes that bring you off the chair. You go, wow, what a beautiful pass that was.
I won't be surprised at all to see her shine in that area in the WNBA as much, if not more, than it will be for the shooting standpoint.
Right. But having said that, you're seeing on the other side of the court, South Carolina bringing 9 different players into the game.
Whew.
All of whom might have been better than the next one they replaced.
Yep.
2 freshmen took over the game.
The one freshman guard is going to be a problem for the next 3 years.
Did you see her do a behind-the-back dribble backhand layup?
She almost finished it.
She almost made it. This South Carolina was so good, but Dawn Staley coaches a team. That's the way it should be. She even tells players, if you want to be a star, don't come here.
Yeah.
If you want to win the championship, come here.
We had the game on literally going behind us while the Padre game. I mean, that's something that I can't recall watching having, and I was glued to it. I was literally multitasking at times watching the game, our game, and watching that South Carolina Iowa game.
One thing I'm curious about is the WNBA draft is in like 8 days or something like that. So Caitlin Clark and all of the women that are going to be declaring for pro, they don't get any time in between this college off season and this season coming up. So I'm curious to see how this all goes, and they're going to ride this momentum right into it.
Here's what I'm really curious and hopeful for. Right, last year there was the same type of buzz at the end of the year with all of the exceptional young ladies playing. A lot of them went to the WNBA and didn't have the kind of impact that they had been having, which is the point that I think Diana Taurasi was making. And so, will this group, because there's about 4 or 5 that are elite, can they have the type of impact that we are hoping that they have? That league is the top league for a reason. Just want to point that out. I know many people aren't familiar with it, but the WNBA is the top of the top compared to college.
Yeah, it's a big step. I mean, Caitlin Clark, you think she can do it, but I don't know that she just walks in and scores 37 a game. I mean, that's
she
not
seems like the person
anymore.
Who does that, though.
I know she does.
That's why we're going to be tuned in, though.
Yeah, I don't know that she's going to be able to accomplish that. I mean, these kids are really good to play at the WNBA. And the nice thing is a lot of us are going to get to see it who haven't seen it before. So yeah. That's a great thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to step away for a minute. I will be back in a little bit. More Gwen and Chris on the way. Here's some traffic.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
All right, good lively conversation there on the women's college game of basketball. And it was quite a victory yesterday by South Carolina to take the title. Tonight, UConn and Purdue.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, Penn plays. You'll have a story. UConn and Purdue for the title. Let's talk about that and the rest of the Daily Gambit material.
Do you like money?
I think about money a lot.
Do you like money without doing anything?
Winning.
Do you want to make money while watching sports?
I think Washington is a mortal lock.
Washington! Woohoo!
If you answered yes, this is your segment. Just don't blame us when you lose.
Nothing is ever your fault.
It's your game. Take it.
Gwen and Chris go through the top bets of the day in The Daily Gambit on 97.3 The Fan.
Daily Gambit is our daily sports betting segment here on Gwen and Chris. Please, everybody, gamble responsibly. I'm a little perturbed, Chris, with how this Shohei Ohtani story has been going.
What story?
Exactly.
I know, I forgot all about it.
It has been removed from the news cycle, and I wonder why. I wonder why.
You think baseball has that kind of control over the entire journalism world? Like in baseball, call ESPN and say, absolutely, positively, I want no commentary about this. I want no nothing about this. And ESPN has to go, okay.
I'm not saying
you're wrong.
No, I don't think that they have control that. But ESPN is also towing that line because they want Shohei Ohtani to do interviews on their station.
Yeah. No, you're right. There's a lot
like
of, there's a lot of, what do you call it, dipping in from both sides.
Yes. So that's what angered me today is that happened.
No, the excuse I'm hearing is that the FBI just moves really slow, and so there's nothing to report. But you're right. I mean, 2.5 weeks ago, this was bigger than anything.
Yeah.
And it hasn't even been mentioned since then.
Not even a peep about it. Jacob on the chat says Ohtani planned the eclipse. Makes sense. We're all talking about the eclipse, and we're not talking about Shohei Ohtani and all that stuff going on. Hey, by the way, if you want to, I got into it with a Dodgers fan at the dog park yesterday. Not got into it, but if you want to quickly raise the blood pressure of a Dodgers fan. Just say Shohei Ohtani's guilty.
Oh, yes. They get very defensive.
They do. They get very, very defensive. And then it's all about how Padres fans are jealous. It's great. It's great. That's
Shohei
how you
Ohtani
get
has a gambling addiction that cannot be cured.
No! All right. We're going to start with the first ever, well, not first ever, but Chris Ello five-star bet for the weekend, the NIT final. Indiana State -3.5 on the spread over Seton Hall. And Chris said, this is the bet you want to make this weekend. I went with Indiana State and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But Seton Hall did win the game, and they win the bet 79-77. So there you go, Chris.
Yeah, it's a five-star bet, but truth be told, Indiana State was up by 7 with a minute to go in the game. And it looked like that bet was lost. And then Seton Hall scored the final 9 points. So even on a five-star bet win, I had to really sweat it out.
But you still got the win.
Yeah, but barely.
All right. Clippers and the Denver Nuggets on Friday, I believe. Both of us chose the Nuggets. They were favored by 4 points. Clippers won 102-100.
Yeah, Clippers.
South Carolina women's basketball, North Carolina State on Friday. We know that South Carolina did win. Chris chose NC State. South Carolina was 11.5-point favorite. I chose South Carolina, and they won by 19, 78-59. UConn, Iowa, the most talked-about game of the weekend. Chris chose UConn. Iowa was a 2.5-point favorite. Iowa, I chose them, and I should have chose UConn because Iowa won, but they only won by 2, 71-69, so they did not win the bet.
Again.
There goes that stupid hook.
Yep.
Purdue, 9-point favorites over NC State over the weekend. Both of us chose NC State. Both of us were wrong. Purdue won by 13, 63-50. Finally, UConn, Alabama, total score in the game, 161. Chris went under and then talked me into going under. And we won the bet. 86 plus 72 equals 158, Chris.
Pretty close, though.
Pretty close, gotta say.
They are really good at those spreads.
Yes, they are.
They don't miss by much.
We have the... Oh, wait, hold on. I cannot start this next conversation we're about to start without this music. The Masters is this week, everybody.
Is it really this coming weekend?
Pretty sure it is. You just scared me, though.
And I'm not even aware. I thought it was... hadn't heard.
You hadn't heard.
No, usually you hear about the Masters a little bit before it comes up.
Well, you know what, Chris? It's because all of the players hate golf organizations now. They're all together saying that LIV and PGA Tour has fractured the game of golf.
They're all right. At least this weekend they all can come together in one big kumbaya.
Yeah, why can't I find
playing the Masters?
Stupid schedule on this thing.
It is this weekend.
Okay, I thought so. I was
starts on Wednesday, April the 10th.
I was going to panic a little bit if it wasn't, but all right. So here are some bets. I don't have any like real bets, but if you want to bet on Tiger Woods to win the Masters,
to win.
By the way, Will Zalatoris, I believe, said this is the best he's ever seen Tiger play.
All right, Will, I don't know you. You're an idiot. I mean, Tiger Woods played golf like
he was on
another planet for 20 years.
No, I don't know he meant that.
Do not tell me that this is the best you've ever seen him. He was better than this when he was 9 years old.
He's plus 10,000 to win the Masters.
Yeah.
Phil Mickelson, same odds, which I think is kind of crazy because I feel like Tiger has a better shot to winning.
You do?
Neither of these guys are going to win.
Phil's got a better chance of winning than Tiger.
Tiger just won like 4 years ago.
Yeah, but Phil is still upright and can walk.
Phil doesn't do much golfing these days.
Well, professionally. I'm just saying, if I had to pick one or the other, I'd take Phil.
All right.
Anyway.
There we go. We'll get more bets as we go along.
Scottie Scheffler is like twice as less odds as anybody else.
Yeah, he's unreal. Unreal.
So we'll see if he can win it.
There's an automatic in this golf world right now. It's either Jon Rahm or it's Scottie Scheffler. One of
those
two.
And the dumbest bet you can make is our friend from San Diego State, Xander Schauffele. Unless you can bet him to lead at the end of the first round.
You can do that.
Okay, that might be a good play.
You can also get him like a top 25.
Oh, he'll be a top 5 or 6 for sure. He
just won't. If you go top 10, you get some good odds.
That's a problem with Xander.
All right, here's my national championship basketball parlay, and then we'll go into real bets.
What do you got?
I'm going to go over 24.5 Zach Edey points. Okay. I feel like Zach Edey is going to he needs to have a great game to be number one overall, no questions asked, in the draft.
So, because people are going to be looking at this performance.
This performance against a good UConn team, another fellow 7 foot whatever guy guarding him. So over 24 and a half points. Over, I don't even know who this guy is, but it was a part of whatever I had to choose. Over 6.5 Braden Smith assists.
But he's the Purdue point guard.
All right. And then we're going to do...
Who had like 19 turnovers against NC State. He had a terrible game, and they still won. That's one thing that Purdue can be hopeful tonight, is that he'll have a much better game.
Let's hope. Over 6.5 assists, and then Zach Edey over 12.5 rebounds. So Zach Edey needs a monster game for this to hit. It's plus 485.
So he needs 25 and 13 for you to win.
That's a monster game.
But he's been easily averaging that in the tournament. Just hasn't played against UConn.
Points are going to... I think the points make me most nervous because he is being guarded by a guy that's almost equal his height. So
I wouldn't be surprised if UConn just single teams him, though, and takes away the 3-point shot.
Maybe.
And fingers that Klingon, the 7-2 guy, can defend him well enough to keep him from going crazy.
Yeah.
But UConn just doesn't want any of the other guys hitting threes.
True.
So I think Zach Edey will have his chance to score, and I think he will score.
All right.
So I'm going to go over 24 points as well, because that was one of my picks.
Oh, really?
So 24.5 points. I think Zach will be over that.
All right.
UConn is a 7-point favorite over Purdue in the game itself.
UConn.
Scraby, got to give 7 if you want the powerhouse Huskies.
I believe
Purdue, and you think it'd be close, then you go there.
I do, you know, I do think it's going to be close. I just have to make sure of this before, because we need to do a bracket update before we move on, just so we can tell everybody who's still in it and stuff.
Right.
So right now we have in the Gwen and Chris bracket challenge, we have George, Brian, John. All have UConn on the top of the list. So, George, if UConn wins, George wins.
George is leading, and he picked UConn.
Yes. Now, the first Purdue pick winner.
Right.
My dad.
Your dad can win the pool?
If Purdue wins, he wins the entire thing because he's the highest point getter with Purdue winning.
Isn't it just your dad's bad luck that after all of this time, all these years watching sports, being a big fan, he could win the NCAA pool that pays absolutely nothing?
Oh, no. My dad just wanted credit on the air. He wants credit on the air.
Well, he just got some, even though he hasn't won yet.
Yeah, and I may ask him to call in for maybe 1 minute to
tell
glow.
Us how he did it?
To 1 minute to glow.
To tell us how he did it?
But, yeah, that's how the bracket is right now. Right. If anyone
so with
wants,
that in mind, are you going to go with Purdue?
Yeah, I'm going with Purdue. Sorry, I'm going with Purdue. But I'm in 66th place.
Yeah, I don't
know. So not good.
All right, you're going with Purdue plus the 7.
Yeah.
I'm not. I think, here's the thing. First of all, as I talked about Tony, Zach Edey has done enough to impress me that he can play. But the one thing I saw the other day was Alabama makes some incredible shots from the perimeter. And they were like 8 for 11 from the arc. And they were still losing. There's no way Purdue can shoot that well against this team, I don't think.
Okay.
And so UConn wins much easier than they did against Alabama. And they ended up beating Alabama by 14. This UConn team is ridiculous. And I also, as I said to Tony earlier, when the Aztecs had one day to prepare for UConn and their intricate offense and the championship last year, they had no chance. And they said as much. And I don't know that Purdue with one day to prepare is going to have a lot of answers either. So I'll take UConn. Over-under points for this game is
Buck 43.5.
Final score of 74-70 would get you over. I'm going to go over.
Really?
I think UConn's going to have an 80-point game. Purdue will be in the 70s, so I'll say over.
I think it's going to be like 63-61.
You do?
Yes,
well, under. That's an under then.
Yeah, under.
All right, Cubs and Padres over under 7.5 runs tonight. Yu Darvish. The pitcher for the Cubs is Javier Assad. Don't know a lot about him.
No,
I know that he's an undrafted player in most fantasy leagues.
But let me do this. In
what do you want to do?
Three games in the Bay.
Oh, boy.
They scored,
didn't score a lot of runs.
8 runs.
They only scored 4 on one swing.
They scored 4 on one swing.
Yeah.
I'm going to go under.
Under.
Yeah.
Staying under. Call it a little bit of a breakout tonight, Scrabe.
A breakout?
Like at least a couple of crooked numbers. They can't just keep scoring one run every inning.
Yeah.
So I'll go with the Padres to help it go over.
All right.
And one game on the ice tonight. We haven't done a lot of ice lately. Vancouver, one of the hot teams in the league this year, taking on last year's Stanley Cup champs, the Vegas Golden Knights. It's in Vancouver, where the first place Canucks are favored by 1.5 goals.
It's always 1.5 goals.
It is. Vegas, I'm going to tell you, needs this game because they have not yet clinched a playoff spot.
Mm.
And you're talking about the defending champs are trying to get into the playoffs. Right now, they would be not in the postseason. How about that?
Wow.
So I say Vegas with a lot of motivation covers tonight. I'll take them. Vancouver searching for, you know, home ice advantage and all that stuff that goes with winning your division.
I'm a big Canuck.
You like the Canucks? Do you know what a Canuck is?
It's a Canadian, right?
Very good. So I didn't know you were a big Canuck. Zach Eady is a big Canuck.
He is. He's from Toronto.
You are not a big Canuck.
I am not. I've never even been to Canada.
There you have that.
No one will let me in.
Zach Eady, by the way, doesn't like the fact he's from Canada.
Why?
Well, he does, but
I was going to say what?
Because of that, he's not eligible to receive any NIL money.
Wow.
And he said correctly that he's missing out like on millions of dollars.
He is.
Yeah. That, I mean, as bad as I like the NIL thing, that's how bad I feel for him.
Wow.
That all these other guys take advantage of it, he can't.
That's crazy. I didn't know that. That is that's highway robbery for him.
It is, right? He's playing for free.
He is.
He truly is. All right. In more Gwynn and Chris coming up. And it's the time, Chris, hello. Tony Gwynn Jr., Mr. Scraby. And it is Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan. Quick update on the baseball scoreboard. Jose Ramirez, one of the best players, by the way, in baseball that really people don't talk much about.
No one talks about
him. No, they really don't. MVP type of guy every year. Just hit a two-run homer. Cleveland leads the White Sox 4-0. They're in the fourth. Yankees and Marlins underway, bottom of the first inning. Juan Soto walked.
He walked twice, I believe, yesterday.
Did he?
Too.
I just thought I'd bring that up for all the Padre fans who used to love that so much.
You know, I was going to go into this whole thing where I was going to go and look and see what Juan Soto did through 10 games of last year, and I can't.
No, don't go down that rabbit hole. He's not the guy. You don't want to go through statistics stuff on Juan Soto because he's going to break your heart every time.
Yes.
Statistically, he is really, really good.
But his start with the Yankees and his start with the Padres couldn't be more different.
If you love Mediterranean food like I do, like we do, Spiro's Mediterranean Cuisine, that is the spot for you. For dining and takeout options, visit spiroscuisine.com. They threw this in here. Don't forget the tzatziki sauce.
Ooh, I love tzatziki sauce.
No, don't forget it.
Actually, when you brought in Spiro's last week, I brought home the big like gallon of tzatziki sauce. Everything has had tzatziki sauce.
You brought the jug-o tzatziki in home?
Yes, I need jugs of tzatziki.
Jug-o tzatziki.
Yes.
All right, Tony's back in business, and we are going to get to some Padre pen pals. Suffice to say, in previewing some of these questions, Scraby, the natives are getting restless. Let's check it out after traffic.
It's time to ask the experts, Padres fans.
I was hoping maybe you can bring a little insight into it.
Write us, tweet us, Facebook us, send a carrier pigeon for Chris. He thinks they're cute. Aww. Padres Pen Pals begins.
Hurt the pelota big time.
Now, 97.3 The Fan.
All right, guys, I got to say that this week, we have some very frustrated fans in our Padres pen pals list, and I don't think you guys can blame them, although I think some of the topics that they're bringing up are a little crazy. So let's get right into the first one. And it goes like this. I've been a San Diegan for 30 years, but never really started to pay attention to the team until my son got really into them. And now it's something we love to talk about and go to games together. I hope Tony doesn't laugh at my question, but why has Mike Schilt used Johnny Brito so many times this year, even though he has poor results? It seems like Brito has not been able to get it done this year, and I do know it's too early to make any rash decisions, but Tony, how long until you think Schilt changes, or how long until you think Schilt changes up the strategy?
how long till he changes up the strategy? I don't know. I mean, it's a game.
At least don't do it.
At least he didn't laugh.
I didn't laugh.
Don't
I
was do it.
I don't want to be... I hope nobody takes my laugh as being disrespectful. I'm not trying to do that at all. So, I'm not going to laugh. I think in yesterday's ball game, because I assume that's what we're talking about.
It did come in after the game.
They had to get to that spot earlier. And so they brought in Kolek. He was able to get the last out that, was it Peralta, I think, was in for?
I think
Matsui. It was Matsui. Yeah. That's who it was. Yeah. Matsui came in, got the first two outs. And so they were trying to piece it together. At that time, that was the bigger inning. Now, as it would turn out, and this is what happens when, you know, the depth is it, you're not as deep as you've been in the past. He used that bullet in a spot where he thought he needed to get the outs, in which he did. They were able to get out of that inning. But that came up again the next time, and Brito was the only arm that hadn't been used at that point. And so, not hadn't been used in that game, but hadn't been used in the past, you know, 3-4 games. I think he hadn't pitched since April 1st. And so, listen, man, in the same way Kyle Higashioka couldn't get the bunt down. I know he's had like 3 bunt attempts in his career or something like that. You got to get the job done. You know, that's, and you got to find out if guys can get the job done. And so that's why he went with Brito, and it didn't work out. Listen, if you paid close attention, right, Brito has started off, I think he was pitching in like the 8th. Then he's gradually kind of been, you know, not used. But they got to a point where, you know, a lot of those guys have been taxed. They've been used quite a bit here early. Brito was the freshest arm, and he couldn't get it done.
All right. Chris, what do you think? When does Mike Schilt change his strategy?
I'm going to be critical of Mike Schilt's managing for the first time this year. It won't be the last time, but for the most part, I've been thrilled, and I really love Mike Schilt. But I didn't... here's my complaint. He has gotten a lot of credit, deservedly so, for sticking with the same 6 guys in his batting order every day so far this season. They're the only team that's done it through 12 games. And a lot of people like the fact that the consistency, and guys know what their role is, and guys know exactly, you know, who's up ahead of them and behind them, and tendencies. So Mike Schilt's getting a lot of love for that. At the same time, he has not yet done a very good job, in my estimation, of establishing bullpen roles. And maybe that just takes a lot longer to do, and you have to see what guys can get done in certain situations. But other than Suarez pitching the 9th inning, and now sometimes even coming in the 8th, I have no idea who's coming out of the bullpen at any time. I just don't. And an example of this, I didn't understand yesterday why Waldron would stay in to face Soler, a right-handed hitter with 2 guys on in the 6th inning. And then he would come out of the game with a lefty, Conforto, coming up. But instead of a lefty reliever coming in, of which the Padres have many, they went with Kolek, a right-hander, when he already had a right-hander in the game. Like, stuff like that, I don't get. And I didn't understand why Matsui had to come out of the game. So it's a lot of weird stuff right now, and everybody's trying to find their roles. Brito's one of those guys. I don't know where De Los Santos has gone. Seems like he's been much more effective than Brito. So I think Mike Schilt needs some more time to figure this out. But until then, that's my first criticism of the year.
Any retorts, Tony?
I don't know how that's weird, but I get it. Like, bringing in a right-hander to face a lefty, is that like beyond the pale?
Or no,
is
it it's like, not. But then why did he have to take Waldron out? Why would he have left Waldron in to even face Soler? He gets him out, and then with Conforto coming up, he brings another righty in for Conforto. I thought that was weird. That
maybe because he liked the matchup. Soler, righty on righty. You got a lefty coming up, which is why he didn't stay in to face Conforto. The only, I guess, weird thing is that he didn't bring a lefty in to face Conforto. He brought Kolek in, who was able to get up out of there. So
no, he got out of that. But anyway, the roles are not defined. yet, and I think that they'll be better once they are.
There's a theme here. I know Gwen and Chris are going to roll their eyes at me, but you can't tell me that some part of last year is still haunting the team this year. In fact, when they can't lose anymore, they find more ways to lose, and it's really getting to me. It can't be the coaching staff. It can't be AJ Preller. When, who's up first? Chris? When are these guys going to start taking the blame themselves?
Well, first of all, you're obviously referring to close losses. And after they won their first one-run game, we assumed it was, we had turned the page.
We had exercised the demons.
That's right. But now they've lost back-to-back one-run games on Friday and Sunday.
And those are pretty heartbreaking losses.
Yesterday was especially heartbreaking, as we've discussed.
Heartbreaking.
But
Is somebody laughing on the other end?
Well, I don't know that the question is. Oh, okay. I don't think it's a great question in the sense that I don't know that the Padres haven't taken the blame. What do you mean? When are they going
to
start?
This person really wants the players to put the blame on themselves.
To stand up and say, we suck? What does he want them to say?
What is it like?
Yeah, I don't know what he wants them to say.
I went back and forth with this person, and they just kind of want it to, because everybody blames either Bob Melvin from last year, AJ Preller being too much.
Well, Bob Melvin. The fans do.
Right. So tell his people to stop blaming everybody else.
I get it. Like, it's not. This person's just very frustrated.
Letter writer's in a lot of trouble because they got both Tony and me right after their case. I don't mean to do that to the writer here, and I appreciate them sending in the question. I just don't know that the players haven't taken account for it. I think Jay Cronenworth's a great example. Said he stunk last year. Spent the entire offseason working so that he doesn't stink this year. So I think the players are, counting for it. They got to get the job done, make plays. Right. Kim said was, I messed up the game. I feel terrible about it. What's he supposed to say?
Yes, we'll have another.
He didn't blame Bob Melvin for it.
Right. That's just the thing that fans are going to say because they're irritated with the losses. Which, it's okay. I get being irritated with the losses. There was a almost cursed right there. That was a bad loss yesterday. But it ain't because the players aren't taking accountability for it. I mean, as you said, Hassan Kim said, I lost a game, basically, for us yesterday. So none of that matters. They just have to, as I said earlier in the show, they have to do a better job of executing. And, I'll leave it there. I've already said enough earlier.
Every time I hear the word executing, I always am reminded of the late, great Tampa Bay Buccaneers coach, John McKay. You ever heard this quote before? Yeah,
yes, you've brought it up.
You might have
maybe
told us
a thousand times.
Sorry, but I like it.
Yeah, let me hear it again.
He said after a winless season, he was asked about his players' execution, and he said, yes, I'm in favor of it.
It is a great quote, so it works every time. And I do laugh every time I hear it, I will say.
Me too.
All right, final one. It was obviously a bad weekend for Hassan Kim, and he did take accountability for it, but our next writer does not care. So there's no even question. You guys can just go after I read this. Hassan Kim has had a really bad start to the year, and it's funny to me, after a full offseason of praising him, he starts the year like he has, and I have to think it's because of the contract talk going to his head. It's kind of sacrilege to criticize him, but as someone who is a big part of this team, he has been flat out awful. That's all I got from this person, Tony.
I got nothing.
You got nothing for that?
I got nothing for that.
Now, let me ask you this, and I will, because I know Chris is going to say the same thing. But here's my question on top of this. Do you think that there is some sort of something on his mind about this being a big year for him personally?
Can we get to at least 40 games before we start asking, is there some mental issues going on with players? This is just a terrible exercise when it comes to what's happening. Padres are 5-7 on the year. And
they're in second place, by the way.
They are?
Tied for second place.
I didn't know
that. But you know what that means more importantly? That they've played 12 games. So I don't. I'm not going to. I'm not going to go down this road of. Is he worried about a contract? Is he losing sleep because, you know, they're thinking about getting paid? You guys are going to make me bang my head on this nice new granite top we have here.
Oh, wow.
If I have to answer that. So I can't answer it. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I knew, Chris has his hand up in the air. So you did not like my tweet, by the way, yesterday when I said that he's been playing like he has got a lot on his mind.
Listen, I'm not trying to be funny, but, you know, Manny went into that game hitting 190. Are we to say, are we going to say anything about him? Like, no. We expect him to get going, just like we expect Ha-Sung Kim to get going.
Yes, but now Chris has a hand in the air real quick, but now it's all, is Manny hurt? And if he's hurt, why is he on the IL again? I know. I'm not saying I agree with that. Chris is like,
please
throwing
let Chris
his
talk.
Hand through the air.
Let well, Chris I don't talk. Understand please. This. I mean, you know. You.
So back to me.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just kidding, Chris. Go ahead.
Same way I felt on the round table last week.
Oh, hey, I listened to that, and they went to you quite a bit.
You thought?
Yeah.
No.
You felt forgotten.
I felt forgotten down at the end.
Well, you were kind of hidden away in the corner, so maybe next time you change your spot.
I'll change my seat. Here's the thing on Ha-Sung Kim that I've been dying to say. And the question was, basically, or part of the question in there was, is it possible that he's worried about his contract situation? Okay, let's take that and say that maybe that's true. Maybe the fact that, you know, he doesn't have a new contract and he's a little concerned about it, maybe that's bugging him a little bit. The funny thing about saying that is that last year, after Jake Cronenworth signed his big contract, the criticism of him was that, oh, now he doesn't care
money.
Anymore, so he's got his money, so he doesn't
care.
Which
he wasn't even being paid that year anyway.
But here, you can't have everything. I mean, when you sign Jake Cronenworth and he struggled, you blame the Padres for signing him. And when you haven't signed Ha-Sung Kim and he's struggling a little bit, you're blaming them for that.
Someone needs to pay, Chris.
I'm just saying you can't have all of this stuff. You know, and I don't believe it anyway. It's 12 games. And when you look at the key play yesterday, the loss.
It's time to ask the experts, Padres fans.
I was hoping maybe you can bring a little insight into it.
Write us, tweet us, Facebook us, send a carrier pigeon for Chris. He thinks they're cute. Aww. Padres Pen Pals begins.
Hurt the pelota big time.
Now, on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, guys, I gotta say that this week we have some very frustrated fans in our Padres Pen Pals list, and I don't think you guys can blame them, although I think some of the topics that they're bringing up are a little crazy. So let's get right into the first one. And it goes like this. I've been a San Diegan for 30 years, but never really started to pay attention to the team until my son got really into them. And now it's something we love to talk about and go to games together. I hope Tony doesn't laugh at my question, but why has Mike Schilt used Johnny Brito so many times this year, even though he has poor results? It seems like Brito has not been able to get it done this year, and I do know it's too early to make any rash decisions, but Tony, how long until you think Schilt changes up the strategy?
How long till he changes up the strategy? I don't know. I mean, it's game.
Don't do it!
At least he didn't laugh.
I didn't laugh. I don't want to be. I hope nobody takes my laugh as being disrespectful. I'm not trying to do that at all. So I'm not going to laugh. I think in yesterday's ball game, because I assume that's what we're talking about.
It did come in after the game.
They had to get to that spot earlier. And so they brought in Kolek. He was able to get the last out. That was it Peralta, I think, was in for?
I think
Matsui. It was Matsui.
Yeah.
That's who it was.
Yeah.
Matsui came in, got the first two outs. And so they were trying to piece it together. At that time, that was the bigger inning. Now, as it would turn out, and this is what happens when, you know, the depth is it. You're not as deep as you've been in the past. He used that bullet in a spot where he thought he needed to get the outs, in which he did. They were able to get out of that inning. But that came up again the next time, and Brito was the only arm that hadn't been used at that point. And so, not hadn't been used in that game, but hadn't been used in the past, you know, three, four games. I think he hadn't pitched since April 1st. And so, listen, man, in the same way Kyle Higashioka couldn't get the bunt down. I know he's had like three bunt attempts in his career or something like that. You got to get the job done. You know, that's, and you got to find out if guys can get the job done. And so that's why he went with Brito, and it didn't work out. Listen, if you pay close attention, right, Brito has started off, I think he was pitching in like the eighth. Then he's gradually kind of been, you know, not used. But they got to a point where, you know, a lot of those guys have been taxed. They've been used quite a bit here early. Brito was the freshest arm, and he couldn't get it done.
All right. Chris, what do you think? When does Mike Schilt change his strategy?
I'm going to be critical of Mike Schilt's managing for the first time this year. It won't be the last time, but for the most part, I've been thrilled, and I really love Mike Schilt. But I didn't. Well, here's my complaint. He has gotten a lot of credit, deservedly so, for sticking with the same six guys in his batting order every day so far this season. They're the only team that's done it through 12 games. And a lot of people like the fact that the consistency, and guys know what their role is, and guys know exactly, you know, who's up ahead of them and behind them, and tendencies. So Mike Schilt's getting a lot of love for that. At the same time, he has not yet done a very good job, in my estimation, of establishing bullpen roles. And maybe that just takes a lot longer to do, and you have to see what guys can get done in certain situations. But other than Suarez pitching the ninth inning, and now sometimes even coming in the eighth, I have no idea who's coming out of the bullpen at any time. I just don't. And an example of this, I didn't understand yesterday why Waldron would stay in to face Soler, a right-handed hitter with two guys on in the sixth inning, and then he would come out of the game with a lefty, Conforto, coming up, but instead of a lefty reliever coming in, of which the Padres have many, they went with Kolek, a right-hander, when he already had a right-hander in the game. Like, stuff like that, I don't get, and I didn't understand why Matsui had to come out of the game. So I it's a lot of weird stuff right now, and everybody's trying to find their roles. Brito's one of those guys. I don't know where De Los Santos has gone. Seems like he's been much more effective than Brito. So I think Mike Schilt needs some more time to figure this out. But until then, that's my first criticism of the year.
Any retorts, Tony?
I don't know how that's weird, but I get it. Like, bringing in a right-hander to face a lefty, is that like beyond the pale?
Or no,
is
it it's like, not. Is but it... I. But then why did he have to take Waldron out? Why would he have left Waldron in to even face Soler? He gets him out, and then with Conforto coming up, he brings another righty in for Conforto. I thought that was weird. That
maybe because he liked the matchup. Soler, righty on righty. You got a lefty coming up, which is why he didn't stay in to face Conforto. The only, I guess, weird thing is that he didn't bring a lefty in to face Conforto. He brought Kolek in, who was able to get up out of there. So
No, he got out of that. But anyway, the roles are not defined yet, and I think that they'll be better once they are.
There's a theme here. I know Gwen and Chris are going to roll their eyes at me, but you can't tell me that some part of last year is still haunting the team this year. In fact, when they can't lose anymore, they find more ways to lose, and it's really getting to me. It can't be the coaching staff. It can't be AJ Preller. When, who's up first? Chris? When are these guys going to start taking the blame themselves?
Well, first of all, you're obviously referring to close losses. And after they won their first one-run game, we assumed it was, we had turned the page.
We had exercised the demons.
That's right. But now they've lost back-to-back one-run games on Friday and Sunday.
I mean, those are pretty heartbreaking losses.
Yesterday was especially heartbreaking, as we've discussed.
Heartbreaking.
But
Tony laughing on the other end?
Well, I don't know that the question is. Oh, okay. I don't think it's a great question in the sense that I don't know that the Padres haven't taken the blame. What do you mean? When are they going
to
start?
This person really wants the players to put the blame on themselves.
To stand up and say, we suck? What does he want them to say?
What is that like?
Yeah, I don't know what he wants them to say.
I went back and forth with this person, and they just kind of want it to... Because everybody blames either Bob Melvin from last year, A.J. Preller being too much.
The players don't blame that on Bob Melvin. The fans do.
Tell his people to stop blaming everybody else.
I get it. Like, it's not... This person's just very frustrated.
This letter writer's in a lot of trouble because they got both Tony and me right after their case.
I don't mean to do that to the writer here,
and I appreciate them, you know, sending in the question. I just don't know that the players haven't taken account for it. I think Jay Cronenworth's a great example. Said he stunk last year. Spent the entire offseason working so that he doesn't stink this year. So... I think the players are, you know, counting for it. They got to get the job done, make plays. Right. Hassan Kim said was, I messed up the game. I feel terrible about it. What's he supposed to say?
Yes, we'll have another.
He didn't blame Bob Melvin for it.
I think that's just the thing that fans are going to say because they're irritated with the losses. Which, you know, it's okay. I get being irritated with the losses. Almost cursed right there. That was a bad loss yesterday. But it ain't because the players aren't taking accountability for it. I mean, as you said, Hassan Kim said, I lost a game, basically, for us yesterday. So none of that matters. They just have to, as I said earlier in the show, they have to do a better job of executing. And, yeah, I'll leave it there. I've already said enough earlier.
Every time I hear the word executing, I always am reminded of the late, great Tampa Bay Buccaneers coach, John McKay. You ever heard this quote before? Yeah,
yes, you've brought it up maybe a thousand times.
Sorry, but I like it.
Yeah, let me hear it again.
He said after a winless season, he was asked about his player's execution, and he said, yes, I'm in favor of it.
It is a great quote, so it works every time. And I do laugh every time I hear it, I will say.
Me too.
All right, final one. It was obviously a bad weekend for Hassan Kim, and he did take accountability for it, but our next writer does not care. So there's no even question. You guys can just go after I read this. Hassan Kim has had a really bad start to the year, and it's funny to me, after a full offseason of praising him, he starts the year like he has, and I have to think it's because of the contract talk going to his head. It's kind of sacrilege to criticize him, but as someone who is a big part of this team, he has been flat out awful. That's all I got from this person, Tony.
I got nothing for that.
You got nothing for that?
I got nothing for that.
Now, let me ask you this, and I will, because I know Chris is going to say the same thing, but here's my question on top of this. Do you think that there is some sort of something on his mind about this being a big year for him, personally?
Can we, like, get to at least, like, 40 games before we start asking, is there some mental issues going on with players? Like, this is just a terrible exercise when it comes to what's happening. The Padres are 5-7 on the year. And
they're in second place, by the way.
They are?
Tied for second place.
I didn't know that.
But you know what that means more importantly? That they've played 12 games. So I'm not going to go down this road of, is he worried about a contract? is he losing sleep because, you know, they're thinking about getting paid? You guys are going to make me bang my head on this nice new granite top we have here.
Oh, wow.
If I have to answer that. So I can't answer it. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I knew, Chris has his hand up in the air. So you did not like my tweet, by the way, yesterday when I said that he's been playing like he has got a lot on his mind.
I'm not trying to be funny, but, you know, Manny went into that game hitting 190. Are we to say, are we going to say anything about him? Like, no, we expect him to get going, just like we expect Hassan Kim to get going.
Yes, but the now the Chris has a hand in the air real quick, but now it's all, is Manny hurt? And if he's hurt, why is he on the IL again? I know. I'm not saying I agree with that. Chris is like,
please
throwing
let Chris
his
talk.
Hand through the air.
Let well, Chris I don't talk. Understand please. This. I mean, you know. You.
So back to me.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just kidding, Chris. Go ahead.
Same way I felt on the round table last week.
Oh, hey, I listened to that, and they went to you quite a bit.
You thought?
Yeah.
No.
I felt forgotten
down at the end.
Well, you were kind of hidden away in the corner, so maybe next time you change your spot.
I'll change my seat. Now, here's the thing on Ha-Seong Kim that I've been dying to say. And the question was basically, or part of the question in there was, is it possible that he's worried about his contract situation? Okay, let's take that and say that maybe that's true. Maybe the fact that, you know, he doesn't have a new contract and he's a little concerned about it, maybe that's bugging him a little bit. The funny thing about saying that is that last year, after Jake Cronenworth signed his big contract, the criticism of him was that, oh, now he doesn't care
money.
Anymore, so he's got his money, so he doesn't
care.
Which
he wasn't even being paid that year anyway.
But here, you can't have everything. I mean, when you sign Jake Cronenworth and he struggled, you blame the Padres for signing him. And when you haven't signed Ha-Seong Kim and he's struggling a little bit, you're blaming them for that.
Someone needs to pay, Chris.
I'm just saying you can't have all of this stuff. You know, and I don't believe it anyway. It's 12 games. And when you look at the key play yesterday, the loss, end up losing the game, I don't believe Ha-Seong Kim had time to think about his contract when he reached out to tag Jorge Soler. The ball just bounced out of his glove. I don't think that had anything to do with, I got my contract. Oh,
here comes an extra $10,000.
So that's why I think the whole question's a little silly.
All right, I knew that was good.
By the way, that wasn't even the question from our lovely writer. This was a Scraby question,
me.
Right?
Because
there.
I had
well,
to
but the writer
question.
Did mention in there, if I'm not mistaken, that you know maybe the contract thing is on his mind. So I'm just saying, if that's on his mind, then you know how come it was also on Jake anyway.
I can confirm nor deny that my tweet may have been the response. Response, you know, why this person responded the way they did. Anyway.
What did your tweet say? Just for
He said basically send the guy back to Korea.
I did not say
should've
send
left him
the
there.
Guy back to Korea.
Should have left him there, I believe it said.
I did not say that. I said, I just passed John Heyman saying this should be Angel Hernandez's last game. Here it is. Kim's playing like he has a ton of pressure on him, and I have to think he really wants to cash in this offseason.
Okay.
All right. Chris Rizzo fans next, 833-288-0973. Chris has been on a good old win streak as of late, so call in if you think you could stop him, 833-288-0973.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. It's
better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.